In this week's Parsha, in Parshas Noach, we are introduced to a very famous location that plays a very major role in all of our lives, and that is the area of Bavel and the tower that it is named after. And Bavel, as we know, is more than just a location, but it was the center of Torah for centuries and a place that Torah revolved around. And what we want to take away from this evening is the importance of Bavel in our own learning, but most important, the Talmud Bavli and the central role that the Talmud Bavli plays and its development and its use in halacha. So we're going to cover a number of areas in how the Talmud Bavli is relevant to us and why we paskin like the Bavli over the Yerushalmi, and a number of areas that connect to the publication and the writing of the Talmud Bavli. The Halichos Olam is a sefer that discusses the rules of Psak and the Masorah and all different aspects of Torah Shavuot Pes. In the opening piece, Rav Yeshua Levi writes that Ravina and Ravashi were the last of the Amoraim. This is a rule that we know going back since we started learning Gemara, that Ravina and Ravashi are the editors, as we're told, and the last of the Amoraim in that period. The Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us, in the we have here in the first source, the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that Shmuel saw in the Sefer of Adam HaRishon, there was some book that was either written by Adam HaRishon or ascribed to Adam HaRishon, and it gave a list of things that would happen in the future. One of the things it says is Ravina and Ravashi Sof Hora. Ravashi and Ravina are the end of Hora, whatever that means. The end of some sorts of halachic process. And there the Halichos Olam says that there are four goals in the Gemara of Ravina and Ravashi. If you look at Talmud Bavli, he says, there are four things that we're supposed to get out of Talmud Bavli. And the Halichos Olam explains as follows. The first is to explain the reasons and the discussions behind the Mishnah, right? You have a Mishnah, and then the Gemara will then explain the reasons behind the Mishnah. The second thing is Psak Halacha Lamaisa. Often the Gemara will tell us the Halacha is like this. That's number two. Number three is Gzeros and Takanos made after B'yud HaNasi. Certain rabbinic enactments and laws that were brought after the days of the Mishnah. That's the third thing. And the fourth, which we're all familiar with, is Agadata. And Musar and Hashkafa is also one of the purposes of Talmud Bavli, that we should, Chazal put within the Gemara, all the different Hashkafas and Amuna and beliefs and proper views that a Jew should have. Now there's a piece called the Kitzim Ravo HaTalmud, which is classically printed in the beginning of the end of all Maseches Brachos. And the Kitzim Ravo HaTalmud, which is based on Shmuel Hanagin and other people as well who wrote about the history of the Gemara. So he cites a sefer called the Yesod Olam that says, Maremar and Mar Bar of Ashi finished the Gemara in 504 CE. So if you want to put on a calendar and a date what year the Gemara was finished, they count it from 504 CE. And he says that the writing from the Mishnah until the close of the Gemara took 301 years. So from the period the Mishnah was done until the Gemara was closed is 301 years. That is not necessarily agreed upon by everyone. There's a famous letter of Rav Shri Ragon, the Igeris of Rav Shri Ragon. Rav Shri Ragon was asked about a lot of questions about the Gemara and Masorah and Halach and things like that. And Rav Shri Ragon explains that that which Ravina and Ravashi put together was what we'll call proto-Talmud. It was like pre-Gemara. When Ravina and Ravashi, or Mar Bar Ravashi and Maremar, walked away from what they had in 504, that's not what we have. It says Rav Shri Ragon. That's not what we learn today. That was just the initial comings together of what we'll call Talmud Bavli, and it actually continued, he says. The Savarayim, the generations after Rav and Rav Ashi, they also made some additions and some changes to it. And then Rav Shri Ragon says it wasn't really in place till we have it, until we got to Rav Yossi. When we got to Rav Yossi, that was pretty much really when it came together. And you'll even find, maybe even until, you know, the period of the Rif as well, it was still kind of forming in its final form. So the coming together and the putting together the Talmud Bavli took a time, but if we want to say when it really came to a form, it was in 504 CE according to the Sefer Yesod Olam. Look at Rashi there on the Gemara in Bava Metzia. And Rashi, it's a very long Rashi for Rashis, as we see Rashi's out. This is a very long one. Rashi writes, Sof kol morayim ajimehem lohaisa gemara al haseder. There was no such thing as Gemara in order until their period. The Tam HaMishnah, what would happen? They would ask a question on the Mishnah in the Beis HaMedrash, or Shela al Maisa Maora, or something that some rabbi did, and they asked a question about what happened over there. But Din Mamon with money, O Isser, Heter, Kol Echad V'Echad Omer Tamo, what would happen? They would all sit around and they would discuss and say this person would say this, and this person would say that. And Ravashi Ravina Sidro Shmo Samurai. And Ravina Ravashi took all the different things that the Amorayim would say, and they ordered them, Shlifnam Bakabu al Seder Habasektos, and they took those random statements and they said, oh, this is a statement that belongs by Nedarim over here. And this statement that we heard from this Amora, this is a statement that corresponds to this Mishnah and this Masecht over here. So they took random statements that were being discussed by the Amoraim of the generations, and they ordered them, so to speak, it's in some sort of writing form, I guess in notes or something like that, and order them according to the Masechtos that we have. And then they would do is they would ask questions. And bring things in order to answer those questions. And that's what they would put in the Gemara. And therefore, says Rashi, this is what we find when you have an Esavei, a Mesavei, or Minhu, Ibayilahu. All those expressions, they ask from this Braisa, but what about what it says over here? I found a contradiction over here. All of that were the expressions that were used in the putting together of the Gemara in the Beis Medrash of Ravina and Ravashi. So Rabbi Meir Tversky likes to point out that when you learn Gemara, the whole point of Gemara, the way it's structured in the back and forth, is meant to take you in a time machine and put you back in the Beis Medrash of Ravina and Ravashi. That you are engaging, so to speak, in that conversation that happened over there. And then they finally put everything together and establish it in its proper place. This is how Rashi explains what is Gemara. So the simple answer, if someone asks you what Gemara is, it's a collection of all the conversations and the answers and the debates on the Mishnah.
Says they had notebooks from all the years. This is 300 years.
300 years. It sounds like scraps of paper. They took personal notes. It wasn't things that were necessarily distributed, but they took personal notes. Because even that time, the idea of writing down Torah Shabbat Peh was still iffy. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi had a hetzer from the Mishnah, but
they're quoting it to Gemara people who lived 250 years before they were born.
Yes, so they had traditions of things that were written down. I heard from this one. Things like that. The Gemara in Brachos Mem Zayin Mem Beis talks about Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. Whatever that means, we generally classify that to mean serving Talmidei Chachamim. You go to a Rebbe and you learn from his actions. Rashi has a different explanation of Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. He says, Hua Gemara Hatzli B'Svara Shayu Nosnim L'Divrei Mishnah. This is the Gemara in which they use their logic in order to deal with the Mishnah. Tam V'Hayu Misasim Yachad. They would get together. And they would gauge in discussing the Mishnah. Shimush Tamil Chacham means that they would sit together with Tamil Chachamim and discuss the Mishnah. And this was, again, like the proto-Talmud. It was like the introduction to what the Gemara would be. They would sit together and discuss and debate how does this fit together. This Bryce I heard from this one. This initial discussion of the Gemara. And a lot of this is discussed in the Kitzur Kaliyah Talmud, which is printed in the Mevo'ah Talmud in Brachos. Okay. The next thing we want to note is how many editions of the Talmud Bavli were there? Why do I think there's more than one? Well, it's a Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara in Bava Basra on Kufn and Zion on Beis has a question about the following case. Yehuda borrowed money from Shimon, and then he borrowed money from Levi, and then he acquired property. So the question is, who does the lien go to? Is the lien on the first person he borrowed from, or does the lien go to the second person he borrowed from? When he borrows from multiple people, meaning who gets to come and collect from anyone who buys or inherits that property that Yehuda has? Who gets to come? The first guy he borrowed from, or the second guy? Who has first dibs on the lien on any of the property that he would own? So the Gemara gives conflicting answers regarding whether it's the second guy or the first guy. That's not our discussion right now. But then the Gemara says, how do we have this conflicting opinion? Amar Ravina, Mahadura Kama de Ravashi, Amar Lan Rishon. In the first edition, Mahadura means edition, the first edition of Ravashi, he said the first lender is Kana, he gets to take from the lien. Madura Basa Ravashi Amar Lan Yachloku. In the second edition of Ravashi, it says no, both lenders will split on the lien from the borrower. Madura Kama, Madura Basa, first edition, second edition, what are we talking about? So the Halicha Solam, which we quoted from before, learns that there are two editions of the Gemara. There was printing A and there was printing B. And after the second edition was corrected, it wasn't touched anymore, except by the Savarayim, who made some slight changes. And the Teferis Yisrael, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos and Perek Beis, says that it's always a good idea for authors to make a second edition. You have the first print, you go through the rough draft, you check it over, and you make a second edition. He says, this is a good rule in general. He says, where do we see this from? We see it from our Gemara in Bava Basra, that there was a first edition of Gemara and a second edition of the Gemara. And this is just, it's a good lesson in general, right? A person writes an email, and you're going to send it out. Before you click send, check it over. A person does anything. It's always good to review the draft of the first thing that you did. And he says, this is how the Gemara works. There was edition A of Talmud Bavli, and then there was edition B. And then he goes on to say that this is just what Ravina and Ravashi did with Shas Bavli. And he notes that anyone who's learned some of the Masechtas and Shas notes that they're different. For example, Nedarim and Nazir and Erchon and Krisis and Tur and Me'ila and Tamid, a lot of those Masechtas at the end, there's a lot of emendations. The Shita Mekubetzes has a lot of extra things to add in. It's not as tight and clear as the rest. So it says the Tiferes Yisrael. Why? Because those didn't have a Madura Basra. There was no second edition to clean everything up, and therefore the language is not as tight. Some words are missing. It's not perfect, and that's why those Masechtos are different than the rest of Talmud Bavli. The Seder Hadoros, which is a classic work of Jewish history of Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, he argues and says that the Rishonim don't agree with this. It's not true that there were two editions of Shas Bavli. It's not a Ravina. What are you talking about? Ravina Rashi, they got it right the first time. They didn't need to have a rough draft. I mean, cites the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Hananel, the Rav Ashi died at the age of 60. Rav Ashi died when he was 60 years old. And he had a machzer of learning what he taught at the Yarchei Kala. What's a Yarchei Kala? We just mean this to mean like, you know, people get together and learn a lot of Torah. Yarchei Kala is a real thing. In the months of Nisan and Tishrei, so the farmers would take off and they would come and they would get together in the Beis Medrash and the big yeshivas, and all the Rabbanim would give all the big shiurim and all the halacha they would need to know. So in the first 30 years of Rav Ashi's life, he taught a master on all of Mishnayos. Why? There are 60 Masechtos, and you do one each year. So that turns out that if you did one each year for 30 years, so then it would come out that you finished Shas Mishnayos. And he would teach one Mishnah each Yarchei Kala, one in Nisan and Tishrei. And you have to understand, obviously, he was not teaching when he was 1 year old. He must have done it quickly the first time around. So in the first 30 years of his life, he taught all the Masechtos of Mishnayos with all the Gemaras and all the commentaries as he saw fit, and then he turned 30. Happy birthday. For the next 30 years of his life, he did another machzer, another repetition of all of Shas again at these Yarchei Kalas in Tishrei and Nisan to teach Torah to the farmers who needed to know. And that's what it means, Madura Kama Madura Basra. The first time Rav Ashi taught the halacha, he said the halacha was like this. The second time, in his later years, he taught the halacha, he said it was like this. But Shas Bavli didn't have two editions, says the Rashi from Rabbeinu Hanano. Rav Shirgon writes in his letter that they would teach two Masechtos in Mishnayos each year, just like he says. And even Rabbeinu Gershom understands that Madura Aleph was when Rav Ashi was younger, Madura Beis when he was older. But it doesn't mean there was a second edition of Shas Bavli. The Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, has a commentary on Halichos Olam. He had other things to do as well, besides writing the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch and learning with his angel friends who taught him all the Torah. He apparently had time to write a commentary. Oh, and Shivos the Avkas Rochel. He also had time to write a commentary on Halichos Olam. So he says that he learns that the first edition of Shas was written by the time he was 30, and the second edition when he was 30. Again, when the next 30 years. Meaning he says there were two editions. He wrote Madura Aleph in his first 30 years, and he wrote the second edition of Shas Bavli in his second 30 years. So he does follow in line. It's not so crazy to say, like the Halichos Olam and Tiferes Yisrael, that there was two editions. That we are learning Madura Beis, the second edition, so to speak, of Shas Bavli. And this is what we learn when we quote from it.
He edited it.
What? He edited it. There was an editing in the second.
There's no historical record of the first one?
It could be, if you want to say like Tefer Sral, Nedarim, Nazir Erefin, Tzmura, Tamid, are all first editions of Shas Bavli. That's what we're with. They were unedited. People like to discuss now the language. What's the difference between the language of the Bavli and the Yerushalmi? So the Rishonim and Achronim try to point out that it has to do with where they were. The Shas Bavli is more influenced by Aramaic and Persian, because they were closer to that area. And Yerushalmi has much more of an influence from Assyrian and Lashon HaKodesh. That's just the way, that's why there are differences in the language. Let's get now to the idea that the Halacha is like the Talmud Bavli. Or the idea that why do we follow the Bavli? We love Eretz Yisrael, we're a big Zionist, so why do we follow Talmud Bavli? Why don't we follow Talmud Yerushalmi over Talmud Bavli? So this is a big discussion amongst the earliest Rabbanim. The Rambam writes in his introduction to the Adah Chazaka that the Yerushalmi was completed before the Bavli. First the Yerushalmi was done, historically, and then centuries later, Talmud Bavli was done. And the riff at the end of Maseches Erevin says, Ravina and Ravashi were aware of the Talmud Yerushalmi. When Ravina and Ravashi wrote Shas Bavli, they knew, they already had a copy of Talmud Yerushalmi in their hands when they gave the halacha, and therefore, since they were aware of what Shas Yerushalmi said, they could say, oh, we know what this says, but we think it's wrong. And since they came later, and they knew what it said in the Yerushalmi, they had a greater global understanding of all the halacha together, and that's why it becomes the primary text. There's a tshuva of the Rashbash in Siman Reish Beis, and he discusses this over here. Listen to this. He discusses what happened. Let's say we have machlokus between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. Even Jews who live in Israel, Noagim Hayom Kedivrei HaBavli, we still follow the Bavli. And this is important because in the last century, there are some Jews who feel like, oh, we have Eretz Yisrael now, we should bring back the Talmud Yerushalmi, this is the land we're supposed to be in, we should now bring the Yerushalmi to the forefront, maybe we should pass on back the Yerushalmi. But look what the Rashbash says. Even those people who lived in Eretz Yisrael, after the Bavli was made known, they still followed Talmud Bavli over Talmud Yerushalmi because it was a better, more authoritative edition. Everyone learns Bavli. No one learns Yerushalmi. All the poskim, al piv pasku hilchoseim. The halacha, like the Bavli, is part of the Mesorah. V'chibur ha-Rambam al-Pivhu, the Rambam passage like the Bavli. V'chol ha-Marav b'Sfarad u-Mizrach v'Hatzvi in Erzol and Bavel. Everyone follows the Bavli. V'zeh l'fi sha-Talmud ha-Bavli nechtam achar Yerushalmi b'kama me'ashana. As we said, 100 years after Yerushalmi came the Bavli. Shrav Yochanan chasam ha-Yerushalmi v'Ravina Ravashi ha-Yusof ha-Marayim. And Rav Yochanan lived before Ravina and Ravashi. As we see there in the Gemara in Bav Metzia, v'yish b'neim u'bein Rabbi Yochanan kama me'ashana, 100 years of osan me'ashana niglu harbei tamim, and a lot of what happened in the Mesorah in those 100 years. V'od shekolam urayim sharu be'eretz Yisrael in Yiskarim bo, and also in the Talmud Bavli mentions all the rabbis who lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yochanan shechasam atamad yushalmi ha'kosev l'rav v'kazam rabbeinu shebavavol amar al shmuel islay rabba bavavol k'dizim per. We don't find as many discussions of Amorayim of Bavel in the Talmud Yerushalmi. So since the Talmud Bavli is more encompassing of all the opinions, that also gives it primacy. For Rav Kahana, Kashalmi Bavel, it gives a whole discussion about it. Therefore, Al-Kaini says, Anu somchem ala Bavli osu Yerushalmi, the halacha is like the Bavli. More reasons. This reason that we brought is brought by others as well that discuss it, but the Chuvus of the Chassam Sof in Yerdea, Reish Lama Gimel says the Halacha follows the Bavli, because we see it was accepting Eretz Yisrael first, and then in the Talmid HaChacham of Eretz Yisrael were persecuted more, and they didn't grow as great as the Talmid HaChacham of Bavel. We'll see this in the Chuvah of the Rambam in a second. And the Sefer Eshkol, in the name of Rav Haigon, says, in the time of Ravina Ravashi, there was peace in Bavel and strife in Eretz Yisrael. And when you're b'shalom and you have peace, you can think more clear, come out with a proper halacha l'maisa. And since the Talmid Chacham of Bavel had clarity of thought, their Gemara came out better, so to speak, than the Talmud of Eretz Yisrael. The Sefer Achinuch says the Bavli is written in a more lengthier manner. which has more explanations. It's easier to understand what's going on. It goes into discussions in depth. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, we don't find that. The Sechemin writes the Mareches Tav and Erech Talmud. The Halacha follows the Bavli, even when it's lenient against the Yerushalmi. We're never machmer for a Yerushalmi. There's no such concept as the Sechemin. The Halacha is like the Talmud Bavli. There's no Indian of being machmer for the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Or Zaru and Chelek Alf and Tavshin and Dal says that the Yerushalmi was not initially studied as much, and therefore more mistakes crept in over time. And Tosis and Yevamos Kufdal says there was a number of things in the Yerushalmi that have to be changed. Look at the Rivid and Meiser Sheni and Perak Aleph. Look at this. The Rambam's talking about Meiser Sheni on an Egyptian beam. And he has a whole way of how to calculate when you know it's time for Meiser Sheni, and the whole discussion. There comes the Rivid and says, "Bekama ani tama al zeh ha-mechaber, she-savar laharos mitocha tosefta min Yerushalmi." The Rambam's passing like a Tosefta Yerushalmi. The also be yadukim ain Tosefta Yerushalmi asenu b'tukanim. The Tosefta Yerushalmi are not good in our editions. Kol Tzorchan v'lo maspikan kol tzorech. How do you go and paskin against the Talmud Bavli like the Yerushalmi? Yerushalmi the Tosefta is not as good as the Bavli, says the Rambam. What is the Rambam doing? This is just not done. The Rashi writes in Chulin Nun Amar Aleph de Basar b'nei Bavel Garninan de Anam b'nei Gola. We live in Galus, and therefore we follow the Talmud of Galus of Babel. Now, obviously one can make the argument, as they did, Goren and others said, now we live in Eretz Yisrael, we shouldn't follow the Talmud of Galus, but we gave seven other answers as to why the Talmud of Babel is still better, even though Rashi says it's the Talmud of Galus. Now a little bit more hashkafa when it comes to the Talmud Babel. The Bnei Saskar is a sefer on Chumash called the Igra Dekala. Look at what he writes on the next page. In Parshas Vayetze, he says, "V'pasuk v'tan Rachel v'Leia." Rachel and Leah answered them. So why does it have Rachel before Leah? V'tav to Rachel b'asmucha l'Leia. To hayach ansa tzira kodem b'bechira. Right? Who's older? Leah is older than Rachel. So how come it says that Rachel answered before Leah? It's not proper respect for your older sibling, right? The Torah says, "Kabeit asalicha v'asimecha." S comes to include your older sibling, to the chagrin of many younger siblings. So what are we supposed to do in such a case? Why did Rachel answer before Leah? The Gam Amar v'tan lashon yachid. It also says that it was in a singular. Al korcha tlomar sh'Rachel levada ansa. It must mean that Rachel answered alone. B'haskamas Leah. And Leah agreed to what Rachel said. U'mashminu zos ha-torah liyos ikar ha-dibur b'chinas Rachel. Dibor, the language of Dibor, is in the category of Rachel. Of speech corresponds to Rachel. Malchus peh, the Torah Shebaal peh, karinava. Rachel connects the attribute of Torah Shebaal peh, of the oral tradition. Dvar melech shilton alkein b'Torah Shebaal peh, hilchusa ketamuda. He says that's why when it comes to Torah Shebaal peh, the halacha follows the Talmuda Didan, the Gemara of Bavel, neged Talmud Yerushalmi, against the Talmud Yerushalmi. Ki Talmud Yerushalmi b'chinas Leia, the Talmud Didan Rachel. For whatever reason, says the Bnei Yisasa, that I don't understand, the Talmud Bavli corresponds to Rachel, and the Talmud Yerushalmi corresponds to Leah. It could be because, no, both of them are buried in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure. I don't know why one would put one over the other. But so therefore he says, we see from here that Rachel comes before Leah. Just like the Rachel comes before Leah, so too Talmud Bavli comes before Talmud Yerushalmi. Okay, an idea of Piyashkafa. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Chav Dalam and Aleph has very negative things to say about the Talmud Bavli. What does the Gemara say? So the Gemara says as follows. It's very harsh. My Bavel. Why is it called Bavel? Amar Rav Yochanan, Balula b'mikra, Balul b'mishna, Balul b'talmud. Because it's a mixture. It's Balul. Joy writing this week's Parsha. They were all mixed up. There's a bilbul. It's a mixture, Talmud Bavli, of Sukkim, of Mishnah and Gemara. That's why, right, the Malbim says, what happened to the Mishnah in Pergos? What happened to the Mishnah of the Rambam that say, or the Gemara in Kedushin, sorry, that says Shlish the Mikra, Shlish the Talmud, Shlish the Mishnah? We're supposed to divide our learning into Mishnah, Gemara, and Mikra. What happened? We don't do that anymore. Comes the Malbim and says, we do. We learn Gemara. Gemara has everything. Gemara has the Psukim, the Mishnah, and the Gemara, so it covers all of your bases, right? But, so then the quotes the Pasuk. The Pasuk writes in Eicha, b'machashikim hoshiveni kimsei olam, that it's made me dwell in deep darkness, like those long dead. That's a description of the Gemara, Talmud Bavli. That's not very positive. It makes me dwell in deep darkness like those who are dead. So Amar of Yirmiyah, zet Talmud shel Bavel. That's the Gemara of Bavel. That's not very inspiring. Every single time you do the daf, you're engaged in the gemara of those who are deep in darkness and dead. It's not very warm. What's going on over here? So this is repeated again in the gemara in Bavel. Metzi and Pehei and Rashi says they often fought with each other in Bavel. There's a lot of machlokas. Next, a lot of everything was shalom and peaceful. In Bavel, there was a lot of fighting. And that's why it's called darkness. In addition, the Gemara Masechet and Yuma and Zvachim and Menachos use the famous phrase when we talk about harsh language in the Gemara. It says, "Bavloi tepshai mishum deyasiv va'ara dechashucha amarusan shmeisa demeshachu." Right? The stupid Babylonians, they sit in a land that's dark, so their halacha and their psak is also dark and dreary. But that's not also nice. What's with that? That's not nice either. The Gemara Chagiga cites Rav Yochanan, who's the editor of the Yerushalmi, who says, "Ein lo shalom, u'shmul amar zem haporish mitamad l'mishna, Rav Yochanan amar, afilu mishas l'shas." And Rashi explains, who doesn't have peace? Mishas Yerushalmi, b'mashkim hoshvini kimsei olam ze ashash shal bavel, l'shas bavli shu amma kadamina m'sanhedrin. Says Rashi, who's in darkness? A person who learns shas bavli, and goes and learns shas Yerushalmi. The person's in darkness. He has no shalom. Bad for him. What are we ripping on the Talmud Bavli for? We just went on and on about how the Pesach is like the Talmud Bavli. Talmud Bavli is the best. So what happened? Well, how come all of a sudden the Gemara hates its own self? And it's ripping on itself and praising the Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Ritva there in Yuma, in one of the comments about the foolish Babylonians, so he cites the Tshuva of the Rambam that we don't have. The Ritva only had this, and we're left with the Tshuva of the Rambam from the Ritva. And he says, look who we quote in saying all these things about the Talmud Bavli. Rav Yirmi and Rav Zera. Rav Yirmi and Rav Zera were Amorayim of Eretz Yisrael. They were partial to Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Yirmi maintained that people in Bavel did not learn with clarity. And Rav Zera went from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. He fasted for 100 days so he would forget the Torah he learned in Bavel. Clearly, Rav Yirmi and Rav Zera, who are the authors, and Rav Yochanan, who's also the author of all these statements, had a bias towards Yerushalmi over Bavel because they were Amorayim of Eretz Yisrael. Rav Zera says in Bava Basra, right, the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes a person wise. And therefore the Rambam says that these are one opinion, but we don't paskin like them. They're ripping on Talmud Bavli, that's fine. But you know what? They're wrong. We don't paskin like them. We don't paskin Rav Zera. We don't paskin Rav Yom. We don't paskin Rav Yochanan. Talmud Bavli is better than Shas Yerushalmi. That's answer one of the Rambam. And then the Rambam goes on to say, that in that period where they're saying negative things about Talmud Bavli, that's when in Eretz Yisrael things were good and peaceful. And in Bavel there was a lot of persecution. But says the Rambam, in the days of Ravina and Ravashi, things were good in Bavel and bad in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore there was more peace and shalom and clarity for the Talmid Chacham of Bavel. And therefore that's why Talmud Bavli rises to the top. And Talmud Yerushalmi did not become as prominent. So says the Rambam according to the Ritva. The Rav Tzadok HaKohen writes in Likutei Mamarim that when it says Mashach Kim in Megillas Eicha in describing the Bavli in darkness, it's not a bad thing. It means is that the Amoraim of Bavel could go into the depths of areas that were difficult, areas that were dark, and bring out the Psak Halacha. They went into the depths and they came out with clarity and psak of halacha l'maisa. And the Netziv has a very interesting piece in two places. One is in the Emek Davar in Shnos HaMedalad by the Luchos. He compares the first Luchos to the second Luchos. He has a famous piece over there. And the Netziv also an introduction to Torah Shebaal Peh in his introduction to the Emek Shela, his commentary on the Shiltos. In both places, he says the same idea. His introduction to the Shiltos is incredible, and it's a beautiful piece of weaving together different hashkafos about what Torah is supposed to be, and he talks about what is Eish and what's Das, and the fire, and the white, and the black of the Torah. It's a beautiful piece. But there, he says, in regard to Bavel and Gullus, he says that even in Bavel, where things were difficult and dark, they were able to bring out with amazing ability to enlighten the halacha. And then he says, even without the light of Eretz Yisrael, they're able to accomplish so much. And without the light of the Bavli, there wouldn't have been able to be Psak. And he goes on to praise how amazing it was that Talmud Bavli was able to come out of such a difficult place, even at that time. What about the Yerushalmi? We're just a few more minutes, because we're learning as a Refuah Shlema for our friend Usher. So he's a very big lover of the Talmud Yerushalmi. He tries to go through it and learn as much as he can. So we want to talk a little bit about the Yerushalmi as it's just for him. So we know there's one area that the Yerushalmi trumps the Bavli, and that's in Zrayim, the laws of, connected to Eretz Yisrael, because there is no Bavli on Zrayim. And we follow the Yerushalmi in those cases, meaning when you have a Yerushalmi stating something about the laws of Zrayim versus a statement that's randomly placed somewhere in the Bavli about the laws of Eretz Yisrael when it comes to agriculture, the Yerushalmi beats it in that case. And this is clear from the Rambam and Hilchos Zrayim, and the Tshuvas of the Beis Mordechai and Chelek Beis and Siman Aleph notes that if you look at all of the writings of the Gra, the piece that we have the most in his handwriting is the Yerushalmi on Zrayim, which shows us how much the Vilna Gaon loved the Yerushalmi on Zrayim. He had such an affinity and a love for the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he would have such beautiful writings in his own handwriting from the Vilna Gaon regarding these laws connected to Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban in his Nechamos and Yevamos tells us the Yerushalmi is an important piece in unlocking areas of the Bavli. Sometimes things in the Talmud Bavli are not clear, and the Yerushalmi is an important helper in that area of Halacha. And the Rav Yah also says that the Yerushalmi is integral perish on the Bavli. The Pnei Yeshua wrote a Haskamah to the Korban Ha'eda. The Korban Ha'eda is the commentary on the Yerushalmi. And the Pnei Yeshua in his Haskamah, his approbation, writes that people need to know that the Talmud, the Torah Shebaal Peh, is together with Bavli and Yerushalmi. They're not exclusive. You use them together in tandem in order to have a complete understanding of the Torah. He says, "V'lo nechalkim l'shtei Torahs chasusham." There are not two Torahs, says the Pnei Yeshua. "Kim yachta v'yutamim b'machberas achas chibor l'kodesh." They're used together in Kiddush and Torah in order to teach us the Torah. I want to end with an incredible letter from Rav Kook. Rav Kook, in his Igros L'Haraya in Chelek Aleph in Siman Kuf Gimel. So he has a letter to Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, author of the Seder Hadoros. And he's writing about some of the things he said. He says, "I want to explain to you the difference in the Bavli and Yerushalmi in one key area." And he says, he cites the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the Sanhedrin Agadol in Yerushalayim is the final word in Pesach. That's it, right? It goes to the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin Yerushalayim. That's it. That's all there's to say. That's the final word. There's no arguing. And that is the Pesach Halacha. Now the question is, in what areas did the Sanhedrin have jurisdiction? In every area they could decide? In every aspect of Torah they were able to decide, and that was it? So there's a machlokus in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli and Pei Zion and Sanhedrin says that the cases brought to the Sanhedrin were only legal in nature. Well, that's all the Sanhedrin passed them on. Is this chicken kosher? Should this person die? Does this person owe this person money? All legal in nature. But the Yerushalmi has a different addition. The Yerushalmi says the Sanhedrin could paskin on a ganata. The Sanhedrin can paskin on hashkafa and amuna. A wild idea in the Yerushalmi. That the Sanhedrin and Yerushalmi could give a psak in what we're supposed to believe and think as Jews. So he says, what's going on in this machlokus? So Rav Kook explained that it's a difference between Torah Eretz Yisrael and the Torah of Galus. And he says the different approaches of the two Gemaras comes from one simple area, and that is Eretz Yisrael is connected to Nevuah. Eretz Yisrael has a connection to Nevuah, a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a form of Ruach HaKodesh, right? The story with one of the prime ministers of Eretz Yisrael and one of the presidents of America, whoever it was, right? He says that the president of America's desk, there was a special phone, right? That he would use it to, that he had a special phone, and he told the prime minister of Israel that, you know, it's a line that gives me direct connection to God. So that was his joke. And then the president of America came to Eretz Yisrael and he saw the prime minister's office and he said, "Oh, you have a phone?" And he said, "Yeah." He says, "Also my phone to God, but this, it's a local call. It's not a long distance call. Here it's a local call." So Eretz Yisrael, we have a stronger, closer connection to Hashem in the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. And this is a fundamental difference between the style and the difference between Yerushalmi and Bavli. He says, since Torah's Eretz Yisrael is rooted in Nevuah, therefore, there are no elaborate discussions. You don't need to discuss it because in Eretz Yisrael, it's clear. This is the halacha. I don't need to debate back and forth. It's clear from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from Nevuah. The Talmidei Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael arrive at legal decisions through an intuitive Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah. And he says, this is why the Yerushalmi is so short. There's no reason to discuss. I have a connection to Hashem. That's it. Halacha l'maisa. The Bavli, whoever, says Rav Kook, that doesn't have this connection to Nevuah and this Ruach HaTorah of Eretz Yisrael. And above all, they had discussions and machlokas and reasonings and back and forth. And he says, that's why you'll notice the language when you want to teach someone the halacha in the Bavli versus the Yushami is very different. When you want to tell someone the halacha, or you want to tell them the Bavli, what do you say? Ta shma, come and hear. When you want to tell someone that in the language of the Yushami, you say ta chazi, come and see. Because when you see something, there's a level of clarity above hearing something, says Rav Kook. In Eretz Yisrael, you can see the Torah Hashem in a clear manner. And therefore, he says the difference between two Gemaras is when it comes to Agadata as well. Because the Chovas HaLevavos writes in his Hakdama that you can't paskin in Agadata. But then says Rav Kook that Rav Haigon writes that you can paskin in Agadata. You can have a machlokas in Hashkafa, so to speak, in Agadata in the Gemara. And in the Yushami, in the eyes of the Yushami, you can. Why? Because in Bavel, you can't paskin and Hashkafa and things like that because you don't have that clarity to make such a decision. We don't have the Sanhedrin. We don't have that clarity, that connection directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in Eretz Yisrael, says Rav Kook, you can paskin and Hashkafa because the Yushami tells us we have an aspect of clarity in our connection to Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and this connection to Nevuah. This is what Rav Kook writes in his letter. Now, obviously, it doesn't impact how we paskin. Even though there might be a level of clarity in the Yushalmi because of Eretz Yisrael, we paskin like the Bavli. But what it does tell us, based on Rav Kook's letter, is that Eretz Yisrael represents a certain clarity, a certain simplicity in being closer to Hashem, a level of what Hashem wants, and having a certain sense of closeness in our vision and our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is what is represented to us in the teachings of the Talmud Yerushalmi, in its brevity, in its style, and its ability to cut through the issues and to give us a clear psak in issues of Hashkafa and Machshava. And it should be the learning of Talmud Yerushalmi, the learning of all Torah for this evening should be a zechus for Asher, b'soch Shachar Chol Yisrael.